Just had to repair the mallet here a little bit. Which I'd like to call to order the Higher Education Policy and Finance Committee. We do have a quorum, and I need a motion
to... Mr. Chair, I move minutes.
Okay. Representative Christensen moves the minutes from March the 18th. Any questions? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes approved. We have a full agenda. Going to make one small change in the agenda that you may have in your possession and take up House File 1391, Representative Erdahl. He has a witness that has to leave fairly early. I move House File 1391 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the final bill. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Welcome. Chair. Members. I'm here to speak on House File 1391, the College Possible Bill. And this program makes college possible for low-income students. The program involves curriculum intensive support provided by AmeriCorps work members. This occurs during the high school students' junior and senior years. The support continues as the students attend college at our institutions throughout Minnesota. AmeriCorps members teach after-school classes with students enrolled in the program. As juniors, students learn about the college application process, prepare for ACT-SAT, learn about college life, and the importance of college. As seniors, they are taken through the college application process, the financial aid process, scholarships, and learn about the transition to college. While in college, the College Possible students are supported all the way through the college graduation, including everything from study skills to choosing a major to understanding college credits. You'd explain them to me when you're done. This program has been located exclusively in the Twin Cities area. The purpose of this bill is to expand the program with an emphasis on extensions into greater Minnesota. 98% of the students in the program earned admission to college. The program is currently in 20 high schools, and 20 schools are on the waiting list. College partners in the program include Augsburg, Century College, St. John's, St. Ben's, Mankato State, St. Catherine, St. Cloud State, St. Paul College, and the University of Minnesota. Our hope is to make this excellent program available to many more students throughout Minnesota. And I have a couple of testifiers.
All right. Who's first? Start by identifying yourself to us and then proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Sarah Jook. I'm the Executive Director of College Possible. College Possible is a nonprofit organization that makes college admission and success possible for low-income youth. The average student in our program, the household income is less than $25,000 a year. More than 90% of our students are first-generation college students, and 92% of our students are students of color. We currently work with nearly 2,000 high school students enrolled at 23 different high schools. We have more than 4,000 college students enrolled at 300 universities nationwide, including 74 here in Minnesota. And this spring, we will celebrate our 1,500th college graduate. We work with our low-income high school students in junior year to help them increase their college entrance exam scores. We take them on campus visits, and we get them involved in service opportunities in their schools and in their communities. We then work with those students senior year of high school to help them apply for at least 5 institutions, to complete their FAFSAs, and to secure private scholarships so that they have the funding necessary to go on to college. We support our students in their transition from high school to college, and then also provide coaches for them all the way through their college careers to make sure that our students are successfully navigating their campuses, building a network of support on their campus, renewing their FAFSAs each year, renewing private scholarships that may have been available to them, and making sure that our students are persisting and graduating. The results of College Possible are unmatched. 98% of our students have earned admission to college, and a College Possible student is 10 times more likely to earn a college degree than their low-income peers. We've recently completed a randomized control trial, which is considered the gold standard of evaluation, with Harvard University, and have found that a college possible student is more likely to apply for and enroll in college and to be better matched with the institution that they attend. We are now the only college access program in the nation that has positive findings on this level of evaluation. In addition to the evaluation evidence, we've had a local economist write about our organization and do some economic analysis of our organization, finding more than a 300% return on investment. We've been very successful here in the Twin Cities and are eager to expand our programming throughout the state of Minnesota. We have more than 15 high schools currently on a wait list for our programs, and we have 74 institutions across the state where our students are currently attending college. We know that if we can put a college coach on a campus, our students will increase their persistence and graduation rates by more than 20%. And so we are eager to grow our high school programming as well as grow our coaching model on campuses throughout the state. With me today, I have one of our students, Laura Dalmeida, who currently attends the University of Minnesota and would like to tell you more about her experience with College Possible.
Before she begins, could you repeat your name for the record again for us?
My name is Sarah Juk.
Last name?
Juk. D-Z-I-U-K.
Okay, thank you very much. Give us your name and then begin your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Laura Dalmeida. I am a first-year student at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities. I joined College Possible my junior year of high school. My first coaches throughout the last 2 years, Kit and Jordan, have been like sisters to me. Coming from a family that highly values education, I knew I would go to college right after high school. However, in terms of how to get there, I was, you could say, clueless because my family was not in position of assisting me with certain things with the process. College Possible has been a great resource for me. My coaches advised me, helped me look for scholarships, write essays, raise my ACT scores, and much more. I'm so grateful for the opportunity of being part of such a great program. All the coaches I've met are really caring and always ready to help. College Possible has and keeps opening lots of opportunity doors for me. Such an amazing program with such great people is critical for students like me who have the drive and potential to go to college but just need to be shown the way. Currently, I also have a coach in college whose name is Asma, and she's also like a sister to me. She has helped me become a better person in many ways, and I have no idea what I would do without her. After my anticipated double major in French and economics, I plan on also being a College Possible coach so that I can help many more like me strive for greatness. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
We would be happy to take any questions at this time.
Okay. Members, any questions of Representative Pugh?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Erdahl, I'm wondering if this program has received a grant in prior bienniums from the state. My first question.
Erdahl. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Representative Pugh and Ms. Chairman. And I think that maybe Ms. Chuck can answer that for me.
Mr. Chair, Representative, last year we received a $750,000 appropriation, and we used those dollars to expand our programming to three new high schools, to double the size of our program at three existing high schools, and to expand our college programming to four new universities in rural Minnesota.
Mr. Chair. Yes, thank you for that response. And I'm wondering then, Representative Erdahl, for this upcoming biennium request, and this is for the biennium, correct? Wondering if this is a matching grant in any way. Is there any private resources that would or could be used to leverage the resources that the state might provide?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Pugh. There's no provision in this format, but I guess, again, Ms. Chuck could answer if there are particular, I'm aware that they are doing private fundraising. She could tell you the extent of that.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we do secure approximately 80% of our revenue from private sources, corporations, foundations, and individuals here in the state. And so we are committed to continuing to raise private resources to support the organization as we grow as well.
Representative Buell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that response. And so I'm wondering what your budget looks like on an annual basis. How many dollars do you have to work with? Did you last year, for example, or maybe on a two-year basis based on the resources that you received mm-hmm. from the state?
Mr. Chair, Representative, this year our budget is totals approximately $4.5 million, and that includes the appropriation that we received from the state of Minnesota. We anticipate next year privately raising at least that amount of money and being near the $6 to $7 million annual funding.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Grunhagen.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. Thanks for the testimony. Looks like a good bill, Representative Erdahl. But just a quick question. What percent of the money that you receive, private and government, goes for administrative costs?
Thank you, Representative Grunhagen.
Representative Erdahl.
Mr. Chair, Representative, currently at least 70% of all of the dollars that we raise goes directly to our programming. Our management and administrative costs hovers typically between 8 and 10% of our total of the total dollars that we raised, and our fundraising costs typically between 10 and 15%.
Representative Grunhagen.
So 70% actually goes to the children, to the students, and the institutions. Is that correct?
Is it Zoic? Am I pronouncing your name right?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yeah. Yes, so at least 70% go directly to the student services. The other 30% or less are human resource costs, rent for our office space for coaches and such. As well as some of our finance costs and fundraising and communications costs.
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm in the insurance and financial industry, and in fact, in the health insurance side, we're under laws. I think it's under 10% we have to keep our administrative costs, including my commissions, by the way, which have been greatly reduced over the years, which I'm fine with doing if it keeps premiums down, okay? Unfortunately, it doesn't. I get less and the premiums still go up. But anyway, that's another problem. The point is, 30% seems high from, and I'm not an expert, I'm a layperson, okay? Just in general, based on the, I'm in business for myself and the businesses I deal with, 30 cents of every dollar goes for fundraising and administrative costs seems a little out of balance. However, do you know other similar programs in other states, how their administrative costs compare to the amount that's actually benefits the students? Do you have any comparative data?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I do. The guideline for a nonprofit is really to have 70% of your funds go to program costs. And so nationally, we are a four-star organization through the Charities Review Council and Charity Navigator and different organizations that do evaluate the work that nonprofits do. And the goal is to be at 70% going towards programs and 30% towards fundraising and administrative. That then allows us to maximize the reach that we can have with students while also focusing on continuing to better our programming and be even more of an answer in the state and in the nation to college access and success for low-income students. So using those management and administrative expenses also allow us to continue to push ourselves to develop new curriculum, enhance the work that we're doing, evaluate our program, and ultimately be a stronger organization that can be an answer for thousands more youth across the country.
Representative Grunhagen.
Last question or comment. I just encourage you to look at that 30%. You know, if I donate to a charity, that's one of the things I try to look at is the administrative fundraising cost. And any charity over 10%, I'm probably not going to give money to, okay? And I'm not saying you're doing anything wrong there, and you're maybe as efficient as you can be, but it does seem 30 cents out of every dollar going for those things seems out of line with my experience, okay? Just a little friendly advice.
Representative Barry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question regarding the areas that you serve and the areas that you want to serve if the bill actually becomes law. You're on page 1, lines 1.10, the appropriation is going to be used proportionately for kids in seven-county metro area and outside. Tell me more about that. Where do you plan on serving in greater Minnesota, and how would you plan on serving these kids?
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we would look to expand our programming, both our high school programming as well as our college programming. So I mentioned we have 74 institutions in the state where we have students currently enrolled in college. We have coaches on 8 of those campuses, and we support the rest of those campuses virtually. And so what we would like to do is we would like to place more coaches on campuses throughout the state where we have a large number of students in attendance. So we would look to increase our coaching support in Mankato and St. Cloud, Duluth, Rochester, Southwest State, institutions throughout the state where we have many college students. So a portion of the funds would be to support the college success programming for those students enrolled on campuses. In terms of the high school program growth, we plan to go through an extensive process to identify the schools and the communities that are in greatest need of a college access program partnering with their school. As we consider our growth when we've grown in the metro area, we look to schools that have large numbers of low-income students so that we can serve the most number of students in the community possible. We also look for communities that don't have other college access programming or lines of support for students in the high school. And then we also look for high school communities where there are some nearby college options where we can maximize our efficiencies in those communities by having both college coaches and high school coaches. So right now we have a short list of about 30 high schools in 30 different communities throughout the state of Minnesota that we would look to expand to within the next couple of years. Not to all of those 30 schools, but we would certainly use our criteria to find the best fits for the upcoming years.
Yeah, I just want to remind members we have 6 more bills to pass today. Representative Beer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's all.
Okay. Representative Norton.
That's all right.
Go ahead, Nat.
Well, it was just, can you tell me, you're talking a lot about working with the colleges. One of the things that we've dealt with, several of us have bills this year on college completion and trying to make certain that students that go to college take full credit and graduate in 4 years. Are you working with some colleges in particular that are focused on that as well? Have you... Can you tell me of an example where you might be working with one of those Minsku, perhaps, institutions in that area?
Mr. Chair, Representative, we have great partnerships with the University of Minnesota system, with the Minsku system, as well as with the Minnesota Private College Council. Working with the leadership across those collaborations, those institutions, in admissions, in retention, to make sure that everything that we are doing is aligned with the strategic goals of that college as well. A great example of a partnership that we have is with the Century campus. We've had a college coach on that campus for the past 5 years. And have really seen tremendous increases in our students' persistence and graduation from the Century College campus since we started our partnership there. We've seen a 20% increase in persistence and graduation of our students. We've also seen a record number of our students transferring to four-year schools and going on to earn their four-year degrees. So we've been very proud of that partnership, as well as many of the partnerships that we've been able to establish over the years and that we hope to continue growing in the future.
And Mr. Chair, I hope that bodes well for what I hope we can do in some policy work in this committee with a couple of the bills. I think there's a couple today. I know Representative McDonald's had one, and I've had one. And I think, you know, if we're all working together to make certain that our students go to college and get out in 4 years, the better off we'll all be. And so it feels the synergy around this issue feels pretty good for this year. So I hope we see some of those in your final bill.
All right. Representative Erdahl.
Well, thank you very much. I'm pleased to join in the harmony around this table, and hopefully you'll give due consideration to this fine piece of legislation.
Chair then moves that House File 1391 be laid over for possible inclusion in the final bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Bennett. Representative Barrett, first of all, the chair moves that House File 1170 be re-referred to the Education Finance Committee. And you can begin your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Peggy Bennett, representative for 27A. And 1170 is a teacher loan forgiveness program. We have been hearing very much in our K-12 committees the extreme shortages that we have in certain licensure areas, I should say licensure fields, so we don't confuse it, throughout our state, special ed being one of them, and also some geographic areas that have licensure shortages. So this bill would attempt to address that issue by providing some loan forgiveness for teachers who would choose to teach in those licensure fields, the shortage fields, or geographic areas. So just briefly say a few things about the bill, and I have a couple of testifiers here as well. It directs the Commissioner Office of Higher Education to establish and administer a teacher shortage loan forgiveness program. It directs the Education Commissioner to use the annual teacher supply and demand report, it's a report that they already do, to identify the licensure fields and economic development regions that are experiencing shortages. The people who would be teaching in these shortage areas would reapply annually for up to 5 years and submit an affidavit verifying they are teaching in a shortage area or field. And at this point, the loan forgiveness amount is an unspecified amount. I'll leave that up to the committee and the chair to determine. There are penalties if somebody is not being honest about it. They could be required to repay the loan, license suspended, or whatever. And basically, that's it. I guess I'm going to, if that's okay with the chair, allow some brief. We'll be really brief because I know you have lots of bills for my testifiers here.
All right. Go ahead. Identify yourself for the record, and then
good
your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Snezhana Besanov, and I'm here on behalf of Minnesota School Boards Association. MSBA represents all the locally elected school board members across the state. And we want to thank Representative Bennett for bringing forward this proposal to address teacher shortage in Minnesota. We believe that House File 1170 is just one of the solutions to this growing issue. It encourages teacher candidates and teachers to acquire licenses and work in designated teacher shortage areas. This proposal is similar to already established loan forgiveness programs that we have in Minnesota for health professionals, including dentists, public health workers, physicians, surgeons, veterinarians who choose to work in the shortage areas, as well as American Indian teachers. MSBA has a grassroots, member-driven approach to developing our platform. And as we traveled across the state, listening to the frustrations of school administrators regarding hiring and retaining highly qualified teachers, four areas of concern stood out. Teacher shortage, decrease in applicants across the state, losing good candidates to other states and districts, and terminating or turning away highly qualified teachers due to licensure obstacles. Currently, outstate rural school districts are seeing sharp decline in the number of applicants in response to certain teaching positions. We've heard stories from one district reporting that they used to receive hundreds of applications for elementary vacancies, but now they generated only 11 applications for five vacancies. And some of the licensed areas still remain vacant in those school districts. And many of the same reports are also, or concerns are noted in the Minnesota Department of Education 2015 Teacher Supply and Demand Report to the legislature. According to the report, the number of new licenses granted by Minnesota has decreased by 822 licenses between 2009 and 13, and decreases apparent in every licensure field. One of the findings is that while specific teacher licensure areas experience these shortages remain the same, the percentage of districts indicating that it's difficult or impossible to hire highly qualified teachers in these areas is about the double we've seen in the 2012 survey. Teacher shortage in Minnesota has also gotten the attention of the U.S. Department of Education. And according to the letter sent by the U.S. Department of Education, the Office of Post-Secondary Education, Minnesota has 27 areas of shortage, nine of which are areas of specialization under special education. And just to give you a little bit of perspective here, in 1990 to 1992, we had only three areas of shortage. But since 2005, the numbers started to grow, and they've continually grown. So in conclusion, Minnesota is experiencing teacher shortage in some licensure fields in many parts of the state. And we believe that House File 1170 is just one part of the solution. It will definitely take significant effort to overcome this growing issue. Thank you, Chair and members, for your attention.
Thank you.
Welcome, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Joe Gould with the Minnesota Rural Education Association. We'd just like to echo a lot of the same concerns as MSBA. And that we support the bill. We've had discussions with both the Senate and House authors. So thank you, Representative Bennett, for bringing this bill forward. $30,000, as I'm sure a lot of you know, is the average debt amount per college graduate in Minnesota. And our teachers are not immune from that. This program would help plug some holes in the federal student loan forgiveness program. So we're excited about that. And we are experiencing a silent teacher crisis across rural Minnesota. We need help recruiting and incentivizing teachers to go into the field. Our superintendents have told us time and time again that they are experiencing hiring difficulties in all subject areas and in all licensure areas. We appreciate the amendment that was incorporated at the bill's last stop that would include the economic development regions around rural Minnesota that MDE has identified as geographic shortage areas. So with that, I appreciate your support for the bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Go ahead. Identify yourself for the record and then go ahead. Yeah,
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Cindy Christ. I'm here representing MACTE, the Minnesota Association of Colleges for Teacher Education, and very pleased to support House File 1170. We know that too many individuals who are interested in pursuing a teaching career are unable to complete licensure because of financial limitations. These provisions would obviously help. But at the same time, hiring challenges are not always or only a reflection of the number of licensed teachers in the state. In fact, in some disciplines, there are more than enough candidates to fill the needed positions, the empty positions. As a result, we think the provisions of this bill could not only encourage candidates, therefore, to consider shortage fields, but also choose to teach in districts experiencing particular hiring challenges. In fact, with this focus on fully licensing teachers, we believe it offers a better strategy for ensuring an adequate supply of fully qualified teachers than some of the provisions of House File 1591, the Omnibus E-12 policy bill, which we fear would lower standards for some teachers. So we just want to applaud Representative Bennett for her leadership on this important issue and urge her support of House File 1170 as a good investment for Minnesota schools.
Thanks. Okay. Thank you. Questions? Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Bennett, or to any of your testifiers, there's been a reference to the various loan forgiveness programs we have for all sorts of professionals around Minnesota, and I just wondered, what is the evidence that those are helping to alleviate shortages? I don't know. I hear this a lot, and I wonder if we know whether these various programs that we fund actually are getting more people out in the areas where we want them to be or practicing the fields we want them to be in, because we don't want to spend money doing something, attacking a problem in a way that we think might work without any sign based on our experience that it will. So it's better to have some evidence, and that's what I'm looking for.
Who can address the question?
Excuse me, Mr. Chair and Representative Winkler, thank you. I'm going to let one of my testifiers address that because I haven't check that out personally. I'd rather have her comment on that. But I will say we do have a letter that was distributed here from a local student that is very excited about this program. Actually, he's from Albert Lee, my hometown. And I'm so I'm excited to have his letter there, as well as just more anecdotal. When I had some students from our Riverland Community College come up a few weeks ago, one of the young women is going into teaching, and when I told her about this bill, she said, "When you get a bill number, send that to me," and her eyes just lit up. She's very excited, and so just anecdotally, I see excitement with students, but I'll refer to, thank you.
Would you identify yourself once again, then?
With Minnesota School Boards Association, represent Wayne Clark. You know what, I'm so sorry, but I don't have that information. I don't hold those details for you.
Mr. Chair, again, Cindy Chris from MACTI. Representative Winkler, I don't know either for sure about loan forgiveness programs. I know when there have been financial incentives in the past, for example, a number of years ago, there was funding for a Teachers of Color program that supported candidates at Winona State and St. Cloud State. And I know with the dollars available through those programs, there were candidates who pursued teaching degrees who probably wouldn't have been able to do so financially. So that's an imperfect example because it's not a loan forgiveness program, but we do know that we have candidates who drop out of teacher preparation programs, for example, because they can't afford to complete them. So they'd still obviously have to get their loans in order to qualify for loan forgiveness. But I think we have good reason to believe, but I don't have specific applicable evidence to offer that would make a difference.
Representative Winkler?
Mr. Chair, I guess I would just make the comment that we're always chasing the reality that tuition is far too high at every single institution of higher education in the state of Minnesota, and that we should be focusing on bringing tuition down at every single one of them, and instead of trying to ameliorate shortages and by chasing it with dollars. It's the same thing with this whole high tuition student aid model. There's never enough money to actually accomplish all of the projects that we want to accomplish by funding all of these loan forgiveness or financial aid. All those things that we try to put in place to help people afford the high tuition is never enough. It always trails, and the institutions are always ahead by raising tuition. And so, in general, I would just say that we should focus our resources on bringing tuition down, not just at the MinSCU and the University of Minnesota, but the private institutions that you represent as well. Their tuition is too high for the jobs that they're offering and the money that we're paying teachers coming out.
Representative Gruenhagen, you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe you covered this and I just missed it, but if you get a loan forgiveness in your bill, do they have to stay in the profession for 5 or 10 years? Is there a requirement? I mean, I know a lot of people went into teaching, then they went and got a job in the private sector and left teaching after 2 or 3 years. So is there any, did I miss that? Or
Representative Bennett?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Gruenhagen. There is a kind of a progressive element to this loan. So for each year that the teacher would stay in that licensure field or geographic area, they can access a portion of their loan payment. So it actually encourages them to stay in that field for up to 5 years, which is what the loan goes for. And
Representative Gruenhagen.
So if they don't stay in the profession that long, then they no longer get the reduction of the loan? Is that how it works? Is there a scale, I guess, or something?
Mr. Chair and Representative, they would just have to continue to qualify for that year of getting that portion of the loan paid off. They would have to stay and continue teaching.
Thank you.
Anyone care to testify from the audience?
Mr. Chair, if I might add,
Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Winkler's points, and he had some very good points about college expenses and so on. One part of this loan really isn't addressing as much the expense as just incentivizing people, teachers who are going into teaching, to go into those particular licensure areas. It's not that they're so expensive. For example, special ed licensing. Obviously, it takes a few more classes to get that, but it's also an area that we're just having teachers aren't wanting to go into as much just because of the paperwork overload and the stresses that go along with that particular licensure field. So we're also addressing just trying to aim teachers towards these licensure areas that they're just not going into right now.
All right. We have one more question from Member Representative Leon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Bennett, I'm just curious if you have any thoughts on the appropriation amounts or the caps on how much a recipient can apply for, and if, you know, taking some of that into consideration with how many folks may apply for this program, if you could shed some light on some of those areas.
Representative Bennett.
Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Payne, for that question. I've kind of chosen to stay out of the financial point because I figure that our chair and all of you are kind of the experts at that area, so I haven't chosen any caps at this time or even an amount for this particular program.
Representative Lehan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick follow-up. Representative Bennett, do you have any idea, an estimate on how many folks may apply for this program?
Representative Bennett.
Mr. Chair, thank you, and Representative Lehan. Actually, I don't know. Sorry.
Thank you.
We have another testifier. Identify yourself, please, and proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Adosh Uni, Minnesota Department of Education. I've had the opportunity of working with Representative Bennett on this bill and thank the author. And I've also let her know that the governor also has a loan forgiveness program that we'd be very happy to work with the author on seeing if we can find some places where they work together. The governor understands that teacher shortages are a very major concern. And we want to incentivize teachers to meet those needs around the state and in the subject areas. Thanks.
Could we ask you to spell your name for us, please?
Yes. First name Adosh, A-D-O-S-H. Last name Uni, U-N-N-I.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Any questions? Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually have a question for Mr. Uni. So as I was reading through the bill, I was really curious about one section of it, and it talked about annual report on teacher shortage areas and how that was defined. And since you're here, I wasn't going to ask the question, but since you popped up, I'm going to ask you the question. Can you just give us a little bit of background or a little more explanation as to how do you arrive at that? And the reason I ask is I've done some other bills where it says, you know, 10% over the state average is a region that is in great need. So how is this defined?
Mr. Chair, Representative, so to just to clarify the question, you're just kind of asking how the department looks at teacher shortages and how we report that through the report that we come out with every year?
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I just wanted to understand your definition of what a teacher shortage is, because it just simply says that your department says so, and so I just want to know, what does that mean?
Mr. O'Neill.
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Neill, I have skimmed the report recently, looking at certain numbers where we look at the licensure that has occurred in each major area, and I think there's close to 20 areas that we look at, how many are currently licensed in that area, and we look at how many are newly licensed in the past year, and we kind of look at the trends over the past 5 years. Actually, I'm not sure specifically how we come up with the indicator of where the specific shortages are. I can certainly get that information for you in terms of what metric we would use. I know that the report does provide numbers and percentages on where what areas have the licensure, what areas are missing licensure, where the new licensure is, what areas teachers or districts indicate they're having issues or where they project that they're having issues. But in terms of where we're spelling out on this bill, I don't have that particular information at this time.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it's a little hard to wrap my mind around this because maybe that's every single school district in the state of Minnesota. I don't understand the definition. Maybe you could help me understand.
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Neill, a part of the report is completed by surveying superintendents. Ask them where they're having trouble finding licensed teachers, so that's part of the shortage. Part of it, as Adosh said, is looking at how many people actually hold teacher licenses and how many, I don't know, they probably don't do it at a specific course section unit, but but you know what the demand is in districts and then how many teachers are licensed. But they also survey superintendents to identify areas where superintendents are having trouble. And they also survey teacher preparation programs, so colleges and universities that prepare teachers for information that they have based on their partnerships with school districts and the experiences of their graduates to identify shortages. So they gather the information from a number of sources, plus the data that's collected by the federal government.
All right, thank you very much. We do need to move on to some other bills, so Representative Bennett, any final comments? Representative Bennett.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for listening to our need here, and I'm excited about this. I know even for Albert Lee, we currently could not find an English teacher this year for our high school, so I'm thinking this is going to help fit some of those little niches and be a partial solution to a big problem we're having now.
All right. The chair moves that House File 1170 be re-referred to the Education Finance Committee. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
All right. It's still on its way.
So it works.
Yeah, that's where it works.
I was prepared to lose, Mr. Chair. I was ready to
lose. Have a positive attitude. We all need one. Now, Ms. Representative Bennett, you have another bill.
I do, Mr. Chair.
House File 1392. The chair moves House File 1392 be laid over for possible inclusion in the final bill. Would you like to tell us about this?
Yes, and first I'm wondering if I can move an amendment that I have for this bill.
That's the
I think
A2?
Should have that.
A2,
yes.
Amendment?
Correct.
Can you tell us?
Mr. Chair, yes. This just basically is something that gets the language so that we have the intent communicated that we would like in this area. And one specific language was that in the part we're going to talk about here in this committee, I want to make sure that we're not looking at the scores we're talking about here as cut scores. They are just simply guidelines. So part of this language fix is to make sure that intent is communicated here.
Okay. Any questions on the amendment? All those in favor of the A2 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment is adopted. Now you can proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. And 1392 is actually a testing reduction plan for the K-12, specifically 8-12. I won't get into the K-12 part, but maybe more the point that this committee is looking at. I did have some testifiers come to our K-12 committee from Albert Lee, my hometown high school principal there, as well as the director of teacher and learning, but I didn't want to drag them all the way up here. And considering you have a lot of bills to go through, it's probably better anyway. So this bill would reduce some assessments that are given at the high school level. But the part that we would be addressing in this committee is starting on line 610, if yours is the same as mine, it's on page 6. And what we're doing in this part is asking that the some of this language is flipped around here in my amendment, but that the Commissioner of Education, in consultation with the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities Commissioner, would come up with minimum score guidelines on the high school reading, writing, and mathematics Minnesota Comprehensive Assessments, called the MCAs, and that would demonstrate readiness for college-level programs. And it would be readiness for a certificate-level program, a 2-year college program, and a 4-year college program. And what we've heard in our committee quite often is that the students and parents are not getting the information on the MCAs that they would like as it relates to their readiness for college. And this would address this area by asking these two commissioners to come up with some guidelines that would just help students know, am I ready for a 2-year college program, or am I going to need help? Am I ready for a 4-year college program, or will I need help with that? It just gives a little more information for our parents and for our students. Again, this is not a cut score. I would never want to discourage a student who wants to go on to a two- or a four-year college from going, but I do want them to go informed, knowing what to expect. So I'll just leave it open for questions now.
All right, thank you. Members, questions? Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Bennett. One of my big concerns of the omnibus bill we passed in the last biennium was the elimination of a cut score, okay? And the fact that it was demonstrating double-digit gains even for the achievement gap among minorities, you had to pass the test or you couldn't graduate. And, you know, when you remove that, you basically go back to the failed philosophy of social promotion. You get to pass on to the next grade regardless of your academic achievement. And my point is, do they have to pass these tests in order to graduate? The way it sounds, it's no, but it's supposed to give an indication to the parents where they're at as far as their entrance into college, because we've had testimony in this committee for several years about the need for remedial math and English courses of high school graduates going into our colleges, and the percentage ranges from 28% to 40%. I shared 40% with my two-year college in my district, and the staff and the didn't disagree with that figure. So, you know, do they have to pass the test in order to graduate?
Representative Bennett?
Mr. Chair and Representative Grunhagen, this bill actually is not getting into that. It's not changing the law that was made, was it 2 years ago? It's not getting into that part of it at all. This is simply actually reducing the number of tests that students need to take that's required by the state. To get into that a little bit, these particular scores, no, these are not saying in order to go to a two-year college you need this score, and if you don't get it, you don't go. It's not saying that at all. It's simply information. And I always want to be careful. You know, as a teacher, I always told my parents when I worked with first graders on the opposite end of what you're all involved in, but I would have struggling students, and there were people that would tell the parents, you know, your child never going to make it much of anywhere or whatever. And I would say to my parents or the parents that I work with, you know, never give up on a child and never take a test score and let that dictate what the child is. Because actually in elementary school and all the way up through eighth grade, I was one of those kids. And so I just want to be careful that we would never, you know, start tracking students so strictly that we would rule something out. But I will say that the students should go in knowing what to expect, and that's what these scores would do, is help them know what to expect when they are going on to college.
Representative Grunhagen?
Oh, just a follow-up comment. I think Louis Pasteur and Albert Einstein were told at one time that they weren't going to amount to too much.
I think there are a number of examples.
Yes.
We won't take in any time to go into it now, but Google it. Anyone in the audience care to testify for or against? I see none. Representative Bennett, last words.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, and thank you for allowing me to come and present this. I did have a handout that I'll let you look at if you want to, that gives information on students going on to college and our MCAs and what that should tell them. So I just, I'm excited about this. Our schools are excited about reducing some testing and even getting more information out of our current state assessments. So thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Representative Bennett. House File 1392 as amended is laid over for possible inclusion in the final bill. I think Representative Backer is next. House File 1063.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and members. First of all, I would like to offer just an oral amendment, if I may.
I should move the bill first.
Why don't we do that?
House
That's a good idea.
House File 1063 be referred to the HHS Finance Committee. Okay, we're operating off of the first engrossment, just for the record. And I need to find your bill first here.
Yeah, 1063, Mr. Chair.
There we are. And there is an amendment.
Yeah, just a simple
oral amendment,
Mr. Chair and members. It deals with a procedural. Instead of the Department of Human Services, instead of Department of Health, we want the text for life funding go for the Department of Human Service. So on page 2, line 31, page 2, line 31,
it's 13?
Okay. Page 2, line 13. Excuse me. Delete health, and insert human services. So, again, page 2, line 13, we delete health and insert human services.
Line 31?
It's still
It is 3-1. Okay, so we're right here, 0.31.
2.31.
Okay.
Delete.
What we want to do is delete health and insert human services. So we're at
okay. Everyone have it. It's the shortest amendment I think I've seen.
We could lengthen it if you want. No.
All those in favor of the oral amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. We're now in the shape you want it to be in.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill works to expand services for young adults that suffer from mental illness. It does it in 5 ways. We have, number 1, a community rehabilitation service. Number 2, a text message suicide prevention program. Number 3 and 4, develop special projects for treatment of mental illness for teens and young adults. And number 5, it provides supported housing services for adults with mental illness. This bill does partner with an organization called Clubhouse to work in partnership with the Minnesota State Colleges and University Systems. Works along with the Commissioners of Health and the Commissioner of Human Services. And with that, I will turn it over to my testifier, Sue.
All right. Welcome. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Member Sue Abderholden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota, National Alliance on Mental Illness. I think the section that you're most interested in is where the Commissioner of Human Services will collaborate with MNSCHU. Peer specialist is a role in our mental health system where it's someone with the lived experience, someone who lives with mental illness and is doing well. And they go through, it's approximately a 2-week training program. And then community mental health centers can actually hire them to work in the field. And it works very well because, of course, they already have a lot of experience with the system and understanding mental illnesses. And it's really a way to bolster our workforce shortage areas. We had a task force that met on workforce shortages in the mental health area. And one thing we wanted to look at is there a way, especially since if you have to come for the 2-week training and you're from Greater Minnesota, you know, that's a long way, a long time for being away from home. And what we'd like to do, too, is to see, one, if we can have them at community colleges. There might be some coursework that they could take there that could actually satisfy some of these requirements. And also people would get college credit. And then hopefully they could go on at some point and actually become a mental health practitioner. And so this is kind of a career ladder in a sense, too. But we wanted to, this isn't requiring them to develop new classes. We just want the Commissioner of Human Services that understands the peer specialist role to meet with MNSCHU to see if there are any classes that could be used in this way. We have done this also with family peer specialists, which we hope will be starting, you know, in the next year or two. So it has a track record in terms of the two departments, or the Department of Human Services and MNSCHU working together. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
All right. Thank you. Question? Representative Pugh?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to the testifier, I'm wondering if this model has been adopted in any other states that you're aware of.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, We do believe that a couple of states have started to look at this to see if there is a way to have that happen. I think it was like Tennessee, although I haven't had enough coffee yet today, but it was one of those states that did look at doing it this way. So we don't have a lot of experience doing that.
Representative Pugh?
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions for the members? Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Amber Holden, regarding Section 5, the $3 million allocated for fiscal year 16 and 17, regarding the statewide suicide prevention program, I think that you testified in the Health and Human Services Finance, and there's another bill. So question is, are you familiar with that? What's the amount of that, if you recall, and how to... What's the difference between this ask and the one that I saw a week and a half ago at the, I think it was Zerwas's bill, I don't recall. I think it was, yeah, Zerwas.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McDonald, everyone loves text messaging so much that it ended up in three different bills because it is just such an effective program. So in Health and Human Services Finance, you're going to see, frankly, three different bills before you that all fund text messaging because we think it's really important. So how much money it ends up getting funded, of course, is up to that committee.
Okay.
Very good.
Anyone from the audience who would wish to testify on this bill? Seeing none, we're back to Representative Backer.
Yes, I would ask for your support, Chair, and members. I have no other comments.
Okay, thank you very much. Then the Chair will move that House File 1063 as amended be referred to the HHS Finance Committee. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed?
Thank you, Chair and members.
There you go.
Chair.
McDonald.
And just for the record, I guess it was not a Zerwas bill, although he has trillions of them. It was Representative Barrett's bill, the text message. Three bills. So, just for the record.
Thank you. Representative Heitzman. We'll let you move your own bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to go ahead and move House File 1996 for possible inclusion.
There you are.
Thank you.
Go ahead and present your case.
Sure. Over the last biennium, and as many of you might already know, there was an attempt to try and streamline the process for transferring credits in the MNSCU system. And this particular bill is trying to move that process forward a little bit over the next biennium as well. There's a fiscal note attached to it to help with some of the costs associated. I did consult with a number of folks at MNSCU to see what their feelings were in regard to this bill, and they were very favorable to it. So I'd like to go ahead and give my testifiers an opportunity to speak to it now.
All right. State your name and proceed.
Chair Nornes, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify. For the record, my name is Kaylee Schoonmaker, and I'm the president of the Minnesota State College Student Association. I want to start off by taking this opportunity to thank Representative Heintzman for introducing House File 1996. It's a very important bill, and we're excited to be part of the conversation. And we also want to take a moment to thank Representative Pawlowski for his help with the legislation last session. Transfer of credits between colleges and universities is a core function of the MNSCU system. An effective credit transfer saves students time and money. As enrollment, transcripts, and transfer profiles of students become more complex, seamless and efficient transfer is more important than ever. Effective credit transfer ensures that students can attain a degree in a timely and affordable way. Minnesota was an early leader in creating mechanisms for effective transfer, especially in the adoption of the Minnesota Transfer Curriculum, which allows students to complete a block of general education requirements that transfer in their entirety to other public colleges and universities in the state. Today, transfer is much more complex than it was even a decade ago, for several reasons. First, today students are transferring across more institutions than ever before and are often co-enrolled at multiple colleges at the same time. As an example, I have attended multiple campuses over the past 2 years, including Itasca Community College and Lake Superior College, and currently I'm a student at both Century College and St. Paul College. I started at Itasca, which was the closest college to my hometown of Pingilly, and after I had to move to the cities, I enrolled at Century College. I soon found out that some of the courses I needed were only offered at a time that interfered with my work schedule, so I found times that worked at St. Paul College and duly enrolled. This is certainly not unique to me, as students are seeking to move through faster with less cost, and many have families and work that creates a need for flexible scheduling options. As you might imagine, students who have transcripts from multiple institutions face different challenges than students who typically attend one college before looking to transfer to one university. And many students have far more transcripts than the four that I have. Also, today's students have different expectations than students who entered the MNSCU system in the past. Students expect that they can ladder degrees and courses from multiple institutions without losing credits or having to retake similar courses. Additionally, today's students are not bound to traditional notions of occupational versus transfer degrees. Students often begin a program of technical study with the goal of eventually earning a baccalaureate degree. These complexities ensure that there is no single fix, no silver bullet that will solve all of the transfer challenges. We recognize that transfer works for some students, but for others, the transfer system continues to prevent them from achieving the goal of getting their degree and entering the workforce. Over the past few years, transfer changes have occurred that have been of great benefit to students. Much of this reform has focused on better communicating with students about how to navigate the current transfer system. And we're thankful to MNSCU for this work, and we believe they deserve significant credit for these efforts. However, we believe it's time to go beyond communication and create a seamless transfer system that will allow students to move between institutions without losing credits, money, or time toward a baccalaureate degree. Students expect that being part of a system will allow them to move seamlessly among the campuses, and when they discover that to be untrue, they can get very frustrated, and some of them will leave our system. Mr. Chair, members, I want to thank you again for the opportunity to address you today, and I'd like to turn it now over to Kevin Parker, a student at Anoka Ramsey Community College, who will say more about the bill and the implementation plan.
Mr. Parker, please identify yourself for the record and then proceed.
My name is Kevin Parker. And Chair,
go ahead.
Members of the committee, thank you very much for your time. I'm a student and president at Anoka Ramsey Community College. I was also part of the Chairing the Future implementation team that created the plan mentioned in the legislation before you today. The legislation before you will go a long way towards removing roadblocks for students and allowing them greater flexibility in achieving their academic goals. New transfer pathways will allow students in AA, AS, and AFA degrees programs to feel confident that they can get through the baccalaureate degree without unneeded credits or lost time. This is so long as they do still require to meet the academic requirements of the program. Simply put, these pathways will provide seamless transfer for students in a way that the current system does not, and will give them more options about where to attend. Under most of the current transfer agreements, students are limited to moving from one specific college to one specific university. Under these new pathways, students could move from any system college to any system university that has a corresponding program. The implementation plan created by Charting the Future Academic Planning and Collaboration Team lays out a coherent and manageable plan for implementation of these new pathways. The committee looked at similar work from other states, and the plan reflects what has worked well in those states. It also focuses on working within the existing structure that we have here in Minnesota as much as possible to be efficient. I can personally attest to the fact that the team worked hard to create a realistic plan that would put faculty at the center of the process to create the new seamless transfer pathways. I want to stress that this implementation team was always open to feedback and proactively sought it out through numerous channels, both formal and informal, to ensure they put forward a quality plan. I believe President Richard Hansen, who chaired the team, and the other members deserve significant work praise for the work they put into this plan. I also believe it's appropriate to thank MNSCU, faculty groups, and many others for their willingness to engage in efforts to improve transfer for students. While we're sincerely appreciative of the work done by the Charting the Future team, we heard loud and clear from many groups about the need for flexibility in the creation and implementation of these new pathways. The language in this bill gives that while still ensuring the ultimate goal of improving transfer for students. Further, this bill encourages MNSCU in consultation with other groups to explore the idea of enhancing existing or creating new Bachelor of Applied Science degrees. Because of the technical nature of these types of degrees, transfer options are often limited. This effort is aimed at providing those options to students in Associate of Applied Science programs where they don't exist already. We're excited and thankful that we have commitment from other groups moving forward with this effort and believe a statement of support from the legislature will only add to this work. Mr. Chair, members, thank you for this opportunity to speak, and I'd be happy to stand for questions.
All right. Thank you. Representative Heitzman, do you have any other testifiers? That's it. Anyone? Who? Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you. Must be my day to have questions.
Right? Yeah.
I ate my Wheaties this morning. So.
You know, thank you, Representative Heisman, for bringing this bill forward to address this subject. But my question is, is it on the 500,000? Is that, isn't that just part of their job to figure out how to get credits transferred? I mean, I don't know why they need 500,000 in order to do that. But maybe I'm missing something.
Anyone like to address the question?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Gruenhagen, 500,000 was a number that the implementation team came up with together, and the reason that we came to that number was that we figured we would need some funds for the faculty to come together, leave time, that kind of thing. The plan is really centered around faculty from specific disciplines coming together for meetings and developing this curriculum together. So we figured we'd need to allocate some money towards those meetings, and then also for advertisement of these new degrees. We think it could be a huge benefit, for recruitment and getting students in the door. So that was the number that we came to.
Thank you, Ms. Schoonmaker. Representative Gruenhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I just think that, I think that's part of their responsibility. And, when I was on the school board, we had a philosophy. If something is so good that we have to add it to the program, then something on the bottom has to drop off to pay for it, because you just can't keep adding to the pile. And, that seemed to guide, and that was, that seemed to guide us pretty good with that philosophy. And I guess when I look at the things you're saying, and again, I'm a layperson, I could be missing the mark, I just think that's part of their responsibility. And if they need to do advertisement, well, then they have to allocate the funds within their current budgets to do that, just like they do with any other program that they add. But I think it's, you're trying to solve a good problem. I just question the amount of money appropriated to do it. Okay. In a tight fiscal year where we have, way more requests than we have money to meet those. Anyway, that's just my comment.
Just a comment. Anyone from the audience or any other members, first of all? Oh, Representative Norton, thank you.
Sure. Thank you. And I appreciate the testimony and the intent of what's going on here. And frankly, we've got the college completion bill and we've got the dual education bill, both of which these components would fit really nicely with. And so I guess as we move forward, right now, we have a whole bunch of bills that we're hearing now and in other days that are all kind of standalone, and somehow we need to work together to combine them into a process for the university that isn't disjointed, because, when I'm thinking of all these separate bills, all asking Minsky in particular, and I have an amendment on the college completion bill from the University of Minnesota with their suggested changes, we're going to be creating so many different programs all wanting to do the same, I think, right thing. That I hope we can all get together, and rather than having a bunch of standalone bills, we can somehow merge them all together and get a really comprehensive program for Minsky and the university to implement. So I think the topics are very worthy. I think the price tag's a little high, but that's something the chair will have to deal with in the future, but thanks. So,
Representative Heisman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Norton. I do have a comment quick, just to respond to that I think that we're kind of on the same page in regard to a lot of different parts of this thing need to come together as the process continues forward, and that's why I wanted to go to Minsky and say, how does this fit into that puzzle? And it was over a course of a couple of different meetings and discussions that they felt that given it did have an appropriation, there was some help trying to fit all of this together, that it was a good fit for that process that you're describing.
Representative North.
Mr. Chair, and I did the same thing. And so my point isn't that this isn't a good idea. It's that we have four or five different good ideas that Minsky is all comfortable with, and we need to meld them into a workable final solution from that'll be the work of this committee.
Representative Pugh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have just been looking at the House Research Bill summary, and I see that in 2014, we required through legislation Minscu to develop a plan to implement transfer pathways, and this is the first year that I've served on higher education, but I'm wondering if there was an appropriation that came along with this in the last budget, or if it was just a policy directive and there were no resources to come along with that directive. So I would, maybe this is a question for our
Mr. Chair.
Crack research
Representative
team.
Heitzman.
Yeah. Representative Pugh, there was no appropriation in the previous biennium to do this work.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there was no appropriation for the actual planning itself. What ended up happening was we had our Charting the Future process start, and the team, the academic planning and collaboration team, was charged specifically with it through the legislation. So that was the team that Kaylee, myself, and many others were a part of that created the plan through something that was already existing within the system.
Representative Pugh.
Thank you. That answers the question. Thank you.
Okay. Now, anyone from the audience? None. Oh, Representative Pulaski.
Mr. Chair, this represents, unfortunately, the problem we've had with Charting the Future. If Charting the Future is something that Minscu is spending a great deal of resources on, they can apparently dedicate half-time an administrator from every campus to sit on these task forces. The fact that we would need to appropriate money to do what they're already doing when we know where the money should be going to tuition and debt is, there's a word, several words, but I won't use any of them. This should be something that Minscu does. We shouldn't have to pay for it. Considering the resources of that organization and the amount we spend for administration, this should have been reported to us without any additional funding. And if we can't chart the future dealing with credit transfer, we can't chart the future dealing with student debt. We apparently can't chart the future with how we are going to handle enrollment and declining enrollment. It's a rather sad future. So I agree that the issue is an important one. I agreed last year. So did the legislative auditor who helped craft this. The question is, it should be what Minscu should do without us having to pay for it. And that goes for the students and tuition and having them to carry the burden for a decade. I don't have a question.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Pulaski. I think you had a final word a minute ago, but Representative Heitzman, do you want to do it again?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So I want to treat you fair.
I will just go ahead again and thank the chair and members for hearing the bill.
I have a good feeling about 1996. That's the year I was elected. So. House File 1996 laid over for possible inclusion in the final bill. Representative Wills. Welcome to the Committee of Higher Education, and the Chair will move that House File 1479 be referred to the Taxes Committee. That'll be fun. Representative Wills, do you want to begin your testimony?
Yes. House File 1479 deals with 529 plans, which the state of Minnesota used to have an incentive available, a tax break for individuals to invest in these plans. And then in a tough budget time several years ago, that program was ended. And now with our surplus, I think it's an appropriate time to address this program again and having a tax incentive to encourage individuals to save money for college and help reduce and prevent student debt going into college. And I do have an author's amendment for the bill.
That's the A2 amendment? Is that
yes,
it?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Can you briefly explain the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The A2 amendment does a couple of things. The original underlying bill only allows for Minnesota 529 plans, and the amendment would allow any state 529 plans, which would allow for more flexibility for individuals looking at options. And also, it changes a couple of things that are more in the realm of the tax issues, but by changing it to open it up to multiple states, it also changes what happens with how the refund is returned, because the original bill allows for a refund to get reinvested directly into your Minnesota 529 plan, but Minnesota Revenue would not be able to do that if it was any other state's plan. They can't work across the states. So instead, it changes it to either the deduction or a direct credit, a refundable credit. And then we also changed on line 1.8 of the amendment, where it says 200, insert 50. This is the percent return of the credit. We realized that it, by changing it to a refundable credit, you would essentially get 200% back as your refund if we left the 200. And so we reduced that to 50% back as the refund, essentially to encourage and make sure that we still have the individuals having skin in the game and having an investment, so it's not 100% or greater refund, but they do get a tax break still. So hopefully that makes sense. That's essentially what the amendment does.
And the chair will move the amendment A2. Any questions? Hearing none, all those in favor of the A2 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The amendment is adopted. Okay, now to the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as I mentioned, there are several other states that have 529 plans available. And if you've had a chance to look at the House Research Bill summary, it outlines all of the different type of programs that are available and tax credits that are available in other states. So you can see that this is a very popular program across the country. And also, I wanted to mention that in my local paper, The Sun This Week in Apple Valley, this past weekend, there was a column from Congressman John Klein, who was also mentioning some changes being made at the federal level for 529 plans to expand those programs. So it's definitely a national interest. And then I also have Paul Cirkovnik here from the Minnesota Private College Council to talk a little bit more about the value of investing in college and saving for college as opposed to accumulating debt.
Okay, state your name and begin. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Paul Cirkovnik. I'm the president of the Minnesota Private College Council. Members of the Private College Council are 17 Minnesota private, nonprofit, liberal arts colleges and universities. Our member colleges and the Private College Council support this bill because it will help incent families to save for college by creating a tax incentive to encourage annual college savings. I'd like to give you just a few facts about family savings or the lack thereof in our country. And in your packet is a chart about U.S. annual personal savings. If you look at the chart, you'll note that from 1960 to 1985, annual personal savings rate in the United States fluctuated between 7 and 11% of disposable personal income. However, since 1985, the savings rate has dropped substantially and has fluctuated between 2 and 7%. Sallie Mae reported from its annual survey, How America Pays for College, that from 2011 to 2014, average contributions from parent savings, and that includes all kinds of savings, not just 529 plans, but retirement savings or other savings and investments, that those funds, parent savings, met just between 9 and 15% of the total cost of attendance across all types of colleges. And for families with incomes under $100,000, the average contributions from parent savings was just 6 to 12%. This bill is important because it will help provide an incentive to increase saving for college. establishing a tax incentive as an important long-term strategy for making college more affordable for students and families and for easing the debt burdens incurred in paying for college. Beyond the benefit of increased college savings, this bill is important because it helps both lower and middle-income families with the cost of college. Generally, as I think you all know, federal and state financial aid programs like the Pell Grant, the state grant, focus financial aid where the need is the greatest on lower income families. However, as real family incomes have been stagnant or have fallen over the last decade, college is becoming harder to afford for many middle class families whose incomes are not low enough to qualify them for a Pell or a state grant. This bill is a significant tool by which the state can help middle class families with the cost of college, while at the same time encouraging those families to save from their own resources to pay for college. Increasing savings is part of the solution to making college affordable. Over the long term, this bill will be good for Minnesota families and good for the state of Minnesota, and that's why our member colleges support the bill, and we'd appreciate your support for it. Thank you.
Representative Wills, do you have other testifiers?
I know there were other individuals interested in testifying on the bill.
Okay, maybe they could come down. State your name for the record and then begin, please.
Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Brian Peach. I'm with Ameriprise Financial. Thank you for having us here today, and thank you to Representative Wills for advancing this bill. We have 700 financial advisors in the state of Minnesota and roughly 200,000 clients. When people come to us for help with their financial security, they really have two main priorities: one, saving for retirement, and two, saving for their kids' education. The children's education is probably the most emotional component, and it's the thing that our financial advisors spend a lot of time and effort helping people further the goal of getting their kids through school with minimal debt and maximum savings to help out. This bill is critical to helping people save more for college. It lets the investments grow tax-free, and that you can earn much more on it. This is critical to helping people that are middle class get their kids to school with less debt. It's keeping Minnesota in trend with where the nation is going, and we think this is one of the most important things we can do to help prepare our young people for school, further the state's objective of lowering student debt and having more income going back into the economy. So for all those reasons, we support this bill and are very pleased to see it moving.
Okay. Thank you very much. Anyone else in the audience care to step down? Come on down. Now, questions from the members? You did well. Oh, Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wills, I'll just repeat my comment from before. Instead of trying to incent people to say we should just be lowering tuition everywhere for everybody, and to the extent you want to spend $2 billion in the tax code through your favorite credits and grants, I guess this is as good a way to spend that money as any other, but we'd be far better off offering affordable higher education to all students rather than creating incentives for those who can afford to save anyway.
Representative Wills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Winkler. And I understand where you're coming from, and I agree that we need to keep tuition down. But I think the value of a program like this allows you to be able to use the dollars that you've saved at a private or a Minsky system type college, whereas we can have some sort of say over the tuition at a Minsky or a U of M. We don't have any control over the private college's tuition, so this would give families an opportunity to save if they choose to go to a private college as well. So that's just one thing to keep in mind. And then also, because it's structured to have tax refunds or refundable credit and a deduction, it would be beneficial for families of any income level, and that's specifically why we wanted to make sure we had a refundable credit, so that if a family with lower income did not have a tax liability to be able to use a deduction, they could still benefit from the program.
Representative Wills, I move that House File 1479 as amended be referred to the Tax Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. We are down to two bills, I believe. Okay, House File 1658. Chair moves that to be referred to the General Register. This, members, is basically our what we refer to as our vehicle bill. Good bill.
We'll see.
We will have a little testimony here, so you thought you'd get out early. Now, so we recognize a witness who identifies herself as?
Nikki Oliver with the Office of Higher Education. Okay.
Thank you for being here. And can you walk us through this quickly?
We're going through the bill as amended, correct?
Yes.
Okay. For the sake of time, I won't go through every single thing in Article 1.
Before you begin, we do have to make a motion here to...
Yeah.
We've got a DE1 amendment. So I offer the DE1 amendment. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, the amendment has been adopted. Now we can begin.
Mr. Chair, for the sake of time, I will not go through every little detail of Article 1. Article 1 is very technical and small things like changing not-for-profit to non-profit and changing things like amending like repetitive language and things like that. If anyone has questions about Article 1, I can answer those.
Mr. Chair.
We do have a question, Representative Pawlowski.
Mr. Chair, when you're going through this bill, could you tell us if these are new provisions by the Office of Higher Ed, or if these were provisions that the Office of Higher Ed requested in 2014 in the unsession and did not get? Can you distinguish between those?
Yes.
I'm particularly interested in the provisions that the Office of Higher Ed requested in 2014 during the unsession and did not get.
Yes.
Ms. Oliver?
Mr. Chair, everything in Article 1 are things that were included in OHE policy unsession bill in 2014, except for on page 23, section 37, the repeal of the high school to college development transition program. That is something that is new.
Representative Pawlowski.
Mr. Chair, I need a little clarification here. The Office of Higher Ed had an unsession bill in 2014 that we passed. We spent a great deal of time winnowing that bill down from the monster that it was because it created actually a commission and a number of other things that we did not accept as being in the spirit of unsession, nor should they have been something that the Office of Higher Ed should have been dealing with. So what I'm interested in here is what they didn't get in 2014 that was rejected, and then what's new now, and ultimately, are we creating more power for the Office of Higher Ed in any way, shape, or form in this bill?
Yes. Mr. Chair, I'd like to call Tricia Grimes, who was the former legislative liaison during this time, who can probably answer the question better.
Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Pawlowski. All of the changes that are in Article 1 were proposed in the Office of Higher Education unsession bill in 2014. I accept for the high school to college developmental transition program repealer. There are other things that were in the Office of Higher Education unsession bill in 2014 that are not included here. Those included changes that would have occurred at Minsky in the University of Minnesota and would have had to do with legislative oversight. Those items are not in this bill. Does that answer your question?
Representative Pawlowski.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Grimes, it's a good start, but it may not answer at all. Did the commission that the office wanted, is that in the bill? And I'm interested if there are any new powers in this bill for the Office of Higher Ed that it didn't have.
Ms. Grimes?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Pawlowski, the legislative commission that would have had some oversight over cell phones is not in this bill.
the, I'm just looking to see in the, it could be said that in Article 3, Sections 1 and 2 on prohibiting schools from withholding transcripts if the institution has made a loan to a student, that is potentially could be seen as increasing the power the Office of Higher Education has. The idea there is that, for example, if an institution loaned money to a student and the student had not repaid that loan, sometimes the institution currently will withhold the student's transcript, preventing them from transferring to another institution or demonstrating to an employer their credentials.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Grimes, is there anyone then in higher education that would be in opposition to this section?
Grimes?
Mr. Chairman, it is possible that some of the for-profit schools might be in opposition to this section, but my understanding is that they have not expressed any opposition to it.
Well, Mr. Chair, Ms. Grimes, last session we spent 6 hours with the revisers and with both House and Senate staff winnowing down your so-called non-controversial, just nuts and bolts bill. And my concern is now that if the same thing exists here, what's in this bill that we're now disguising as a vehicle bill but might be something more like a very sleek train with a lot of power and engines and is going in directions we don't understand?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Pawlowski, I can assure you that I don't think you would be surprised or distressed by anything that is in this bill.
Representative Pawlowski?
Ms. Grimes, I've heard that all too often in this committee, and then afterwards I'm both. So it's not that I don't trust you, it's just that I don't trust you. Mr. Chair, I'm hopeful that this bill is what you're saying it is, just a vehicle bill, that there's nothing in this bill that's going to add more power, more responsibility, or worse, to the Office of Higher Education. But we're reaching the end of committee time here. This bill is going to the floor as your vehicle bill. Maybe it's wise to trim it extensively, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, I might also comment that this author's amended bill is actually somewhat smaller than the original bill the Office of Higher Ed proposed. So in some respects, it could be said to have been trimmed already.
Mr. Chair and Ms. Grimes, the last time we did that, it took, the first meeting was 6 hours. We had a sequence of other meetings, and we had to trim the bill by, in my recollection, is well over 100 pages. The last time we did this in 2014. So I appreciate working with you, and I trust you to a point, but when a department gets to have a vehicle bill, the crashes usually result.
Trust the chair.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Moore.
If we limited it maybe just to Section 1, I would.
Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I've looked over the bill here, and there's nothing that I find terribly concerning, except I would like someone to explain. You explained the first repealer, I think, but could you explain on 24.20 what, there's a bunch of statutes repealed, would you? I just would like to know what we're repealing.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Norton, that is repealing of the Minnesota Achieve Scholarship Program, which has not been funded since 2011.
Great. Mr. Chair?
Okay, Representative Norton.
Well, unlike Representative Pawlowski, this seems like a reasonable vehicle bill, and I don't have any concerns.
Ms. Oliver, do you want to move through the rest of it as quick as you can?
Yeah. Oops. So, Mr. Chair, members, we'll move on to Article 2 if no one else has questions about Article 1. Page 2324, this amends planning information for post-secondary education, and this is what the removal of the reference to the Chief Scholarship Program, and it also has the repeal of the Chief Scholarship Program, as was mentioned before. Article 3 is not allowing institutions to withhold transcripts for institutional loans
And Section 3 of Article 3 is the revised instruction to edit any cross-references.
Thank you very much. Last call for questions. Hearing none or seeing none, House File 1658 will be referred to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Thank you very much. Okay, Representative Whalen. Welcome, Representative Whalen. You want to move your bill?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 1285 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
All right. Thank you. And proceed.
Thank you. I do have a couple amendments. I don't know if we got the second one. It was more of a technical amendment. The first is the DE2 amendment I'd like to move. And just real briefly, I was in various meetings with lots of interested parties, and while I believe that the heart of the bill is preserved, it addressed some concerns that were raised, and so I would just like to move that to get the bill in the shape I'd like it.
Did you indicate you have an amendment to this amendment?
Yes, and then there's the technical amendment, and I should thank staff as well. So with policy deadline week, we were emailing a lot back and forth, and we ended up missing just a technical thing when we did this DE2 amendment, and so then the A6 amendment just fixes a couple of definitions.
Do you want to move the DE2 first?
Yes.
Okay. We have the DE2 amendment to deal with first. Any questions? All those in favor of the DE2 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, we have that in front of us, and is there, some of us do not have the Second Amendment. Okay, sorry. This would be an oral amendment, okay. I guess, as you're presenting.
So I'd like to offer an oral amendment, page 1, line 18, delete, transfer out, page 1, line 19, delete, or transfer to another post-secondary institution. Page 1, line 20, delete normal and insert expected graduation. Page 2, line 6, delete transfer out. And
what was that last
reference? Page 2, line 6, delete transfer out. And all this is doing, Mr. Chair and members, is making it so that institutions don't have to report the transfer, but they may. So it's instead of mandating it, we're allowing institutions the option of reporting the transfer rates along with other graduation rates.
Do we need that repeated?
So, Mr. Chair, the proposed amendment, this is on the DE2 draft. The amendment is page 1, line 18, delete the phrase "and transfer out." Page 1, line 19, delete the phrase "or transfer to another post-secondary institution." Page 1, line 20, delete normal and insert expected graduation. And then page 2, line 6, delete "and transfer out."
Okay. All those in favor of the oral amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? We're in good shape. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And in the interest of time, I will just get to the heart of it. What this bill seeks to do is require that MNSD and the University of Minnesota provide information on their advertising materials. And what it would be is a link to a website, a direct link, that would have the graduation rates for the school, as well as the average or the percentage of students that graduate with debt and the average amount of that debt. And for me, I just think that it's really important that students have information when they're going into school about the idea of the amount of debt they'll incur. And I know we've heard lots of testimony in this committee already about about student debt, and even one that was just really shocking to me is that a student who didn't realize the amount of debt that they would be getting into. And so while I think it is a piece of the puzzle to address that on the back end and to help students when they're already in the debt, anything we can do to help inform them beforehand I think would be wonderful. And so while a lot of this information is accessible, it's very difficult to find. And I think that this is just going to help students and make the information more easily accessible. So I know that even after meetings with all the stakeholders, there are still folks who have a couple concerns. But I would like to thank Minsky, the University of Minnesota, and everybody else who has met with me and has worked to get this bill into its present state.
Okay. Do you have a testifier?
No, but I believe that there might be people in the audience who would like to.
Anyone who would like to testify, come on down. Meanwhile, Representative Norton has a question.
Thank you. You know, I've been scratching my head going, why are we doing this? And I'm all for transparency. And, you know, when my kids went to college, I went out and dug around and got information, some of which you have, and some of it I might have wanted different things. But can you tell me, is this required of all universities? I worry that if this isn't a requirement across the country, we might be putting ourselves at a disadvantage if they can find this information on the front page of our website and they can't find it on the places of others, and we're being honest, maybe, and open, but it might deter people from coming to the university. So I just wonder, is this a national effort, or is this just something we're doing here?
That's a great question.
Representative Whalen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Norton. It's, to my knowledge, it's not a national effort, but like I said, a lot of the information is currently required by the federal government. It's just difficult to find. So if, for me, when I think about being honest, open, and transparent, that's something I hope that Minnesotans will stand for and that we can be a leader in. And if for some reason students decide, you know, I'm going to go somewhere else and incur massive amounts of debt going to Illinois, I guess that's their choice. But I think that for Minnesotans and students here, we should be helping them get the information that they need.
You have someone at the desk testify, or state your name, please, and then testify.
Chair Nonis and members, I'm Craig Scheneker, System Director for Research with the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. And we just want to thank Representative Whalen for working with us. We appreciate the Delete All Amendment. We think that improves the bill from our perspective, and we're willing to continue to work with her to address some additional issues.
Okay. Thank you. Questions? Okay, no questions. Final word, Representative Whalen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for hearing the bill today.
And would you like to renew your motion?
I would like to renew my motion, Mr. Chair, that the bill be laid over for possible inclusion.
Okay, thank you. That's it. That's the last bill. We did well, members. Appreciate it. And we'll be back tomorrow. Meeting is adjourned.